When Ed Miliband resigned as the leader of the Labour Party after Labour lost the 215 general election, a membership vote unexpectedly replaced him by long-term left-winger Jeremy Corbyn. And Corbyn remained the leader until he too resigned after Labour lost the 2019 general election. But during this period, during his period as leader of the opposition, he was opposed and undermined by a good number of Labour MPs. I mean, Keir Starmer was not amongst them, but served in Corbyn's shadow cabinet till the end alongside long-term left-wingers like Diane Abbott and John McDonald. In the leadership election that followed, Starmer presented himself as the best situated left candidate, and he won. He got about overwhelmingly won. Once installed, however, he joined the anti-Corbynites and launched a purge against Corbyn and his supporters, claiming that they were anti-Semitic because they were critical of Israel's policy against the Palestinians. Corbyn himself was suspended as a member of the Parliamentary Labour Party, though he still remained a member of the Labour Party itself. Now, Starmer could have let him back in, as no doubt Corbyn would have wanted, but he and the clique around him were adamant. They wanted to completely change the Labour Party by, in effect, lopping off its left wing. Corbyn was not allowed to stand as a Labour candidate in last year's general election when they put up a candidate against him, which meant that as he stood against the Labour candidate, he was automatically expelled from the Labour Party. But of course, he won as an independent. Now, from that point on, there were calls for Corbyn to support the formation of a new Left of Labour Party, which would, in effect, be the Labour Party's former left wing as a separate political party. Whatever the reason, Corbyn dithered, and another suspended Labour MP, Zara Sultana, precipitated things by announcing in July that she was resigning from the Labour Party to co-lead a new left-wing party with Corbyn. This was something I think that a lot of people had been waiting for, and some 800,000 were said to express an interest in a new party. But of course, a new party cannot be created just like that. I mean, any new party needs to a statement of what it stands for and a constitution. But Corbyn and his advisors had a plan which in theory seems, on the face of it, reasonable enough. I mean, a provisional committee is set up to draw up a statement of aims and a constitution to be put to the founding conference. The persons attending this conference will be chosen by lot, which is now called sortition, and would adopt the statement and constitution subject to amendments suggested by meetings of members in various parts of the country. And the final documents, as amended and adopted, would then be put to a vote of the whole membership. As I said, this seems a democratic enough way of going about finding any new party, whatever its aims, I mean, including the sortition part. Now, choosing those attending the founding conference by lot would ensure that those attending it would be a representative cross-section of the members and would express the view of the average member, not just those of the activist minority. And this, however, did not go down well amongst the activist minority made up of the various Trotskyist groups that had decided to enter the new party as they, in the past, had entered the Labour Party. They argued that this would exclude experienced militants like, for instance, themselves and their leaders. In the event, it didn't exclude them. It just ensured that the Trotskyists were represented in accordance with the proportion of new party members. I mean, the party claims a membership of 50,000, perhaps 3,000 Trotskyists join. I don't know, maybe a bit less probably. But anyway, that's 6%. Now, there are said to be about 3,500 attendees at the founding conference. 6% of that would be 210. I mean, the Trotskyist groups were pleasantly surprised that quite a few of their members had been chosen to attend, even from some of the minor ones, like the International Bolshevik Tendency. Now, the other objection raised by some was the constitution of the provisional leadership that was tasked with drawing up the aim and constitution of the new party. This responsibility was given to the parliamentary group made up of Corbyn, four pro-Gaza MPs elected in last year's general election, and Sultana. This was called the Independent Alliance. The objection here was to the socially conservative views held by the four Muslim MPs, in particular because they agreed with the Supreme Court's ruling as to what the word woman meant in legislation. They're also accused of being landlords and not being socialists and so not eligible to be in the new party. Actually, two of them had been members of the Labour Party and another had voted Labour. And while they may have been landlords, or three of them might have been landlords, it was a silly objection. I mean, after all, Engels was a capitalist. In any event, they must have received hate mail as well as public criticism, and two of them have since resigned. The other two are still there for the moment and are due to speak at the conference. It's going to be interesting to see what they'll have to say. But if they're all driven out, the new party will lose its mass basis and prospects of winning MPs. They may still be able to win some local councillors in the independent Labour tradition, but not having more than one or two MPs will lessen their credibility. Now, the other thing that the Trotskyists objected to was a provision in the proposed constitution barring dual membership with another political party. This would hit the SWP and SPEW in particular. I think an amendment has been moved to bar membership only of parties that stand against candidates of the new party. Now, if this is not carried and the original proposal adopted, there'll be an immediate crisis for the new party and the Trotskyists. Now, the objection to Trotskyists in the new party has been set out by, of all people, the General Secretary of the Communist Party of Britain. And this is what he wrote. The experience of previous election initiatives on the left pose two other problems that will have to be confronted. Firstly, the readiness of the ultra-leftist sects to infiltrate broad-based mass movements in order to divide them poses a left opposition to the leadership and recruit from those they influence and mislead, which is indeed what the Trotskyists plan. It's a bit of a cheek coming from the Communist Party, as it's what they used to be good at themselves. Incidentally, the official Communist Party position is not to join the new party, but they are prepared to vote and campaign for its candidates under certain circumstances. The Trotskyists are campaigning to make the constitution of the new party as democratic as possible, but not because they believe in democratic organization, because that will give them a wider opportunity to work and recruit within the new party. I mean, they're hypocrites, because their own organizations are not organized democratically, but run by a self-perpetuating group that co-opts new members to its executive committee. I mean, you don't get a chance to vote for individuals for their executive committee, but only for a list presented by the outgoing EC. If you want to challenge them, you have to present an alternative list or go away and form yet another Trotskyist group. But they're not very subtle. And I've got in front of me a leaflet, SWP leaflet headed Five Ways to Turn Your Party Around, one of which is that your party must be democratic. And it says, back amendments, back amendments at the conference that widen democracy, empower the members and branches, and take control from just a few unaccountable figures at the top. But on the back of the leaflet, there's an announcement for a meeting, and its title of the meeting is Why Lenin Matters Today. I mean, as if Lenin didn't stand for a top-down hierarchical vanguard party. You know, while we're about the Trotskyists, I've been to a number of your party meetings to hand out leaflets, and have met beside the SWP and SPEW, Counterfire and RS21, which are both SWP breakaways, Anti-Capitalist Resistance, which is a descendant of the old IMG, Socialist Alternative, which is a SPEW breakaway, Workers' Power, who stand for a Fifth International, presumably because there are so many Fourth Internationals, the Spartacus League, which produces Workers' Hammer, all of which have entered the new party, the International Bolshevik Tendency, wherever they are, maybe, I see Darren is here, maybe he can explain who they are, have also entered, but I didn't see any of them. And there are also those who run the Weekly Worker, who've also entered, even though they're not Trotskyists, they're still Leninists. Also met two Trotskyist groups that have not entered, the Socialist Equality Party, which, like us, says the new party will just be a Labour Party Mark II, and the Revolutionary Communist Group, which says it will be an imperialist party just like Labour. In fact, they accuse Corbyn of being a Zionist. Now, conspicuous by their absence has been the RCP, who originally entered but withdrew when they noticed that most young left of Labour people had joined the Greens, and they're now hunting for recruits for Leninism there instead. Now, people joining the Greens was another factor caused by Corbyn's dithering. at the end of August, the Greens adopted a new leader in eco populist, the one time snake oil salesman, Zach Polanski. I mean, he says in private that he's a bit of a socialist and advocates the same sort of reforms that the new party will, but he got his act together first. I suppose this will be a reason why Sultana launched the appeal for members to join and pay dues early in September. But that was too late. What it did was it caused an acrimonious dispute with Corbyn and others, with threats of legal action from both sides, which must have convinced yet more of the initial 800,000 to join the Greens instead. In any event, the Green Party has soared, according to a leaflet that came through my letterbox yesterday. Our membership now tops 150,000, nearly three times that of the Lib Dems. In fact, where I'm living, they've got an electoral agreement with the Lib Dems. But there's likely to be some sort of electoral agreement or deal between the Greens and the new party. But the Greens are now in by far the stronger bargaining position. And in next May's local elections, we'll be able to reserve the more winnable seats themselves, leaving the new party to take on Labour in the council estates and Muslim areas. I mean, that's assuming, of course, that the two remaining pro-Gaza MPs don't back out too. The original political statement has been amended as a result of comments made at regional assemblies and members. It now mentions socialism more than once. In fact, it mentions it four times and says it is against capitalism rather than just against neoliberalism. Now, those at the conference are going to get to vote on three amendments to this statement. I mean, the first is your party should explicitly signal it is a socialist party, yes or no. Your party should explicitly signal that the working class is at the heart of the social alliance it seeks to build, yes or no. Your party should be a mass party rooted in the broadest possible social alliance, yes or no. An explanatory note states both sides of the argument on whether or not to commit to the word socialism, is what they say. This is a central issue of principle for the party to resolve. Are we a socialist party? To zoom in on one group at a regional assembly in Colchester, the facilitator reported that members were divided between those who thought the specific word socialist should be removed as it scares people off, and those who wanted a more direct pro-socialist message. Now, I'm guessing that the vote will go in favour of claiming to be a socialist party, but I'm also guessing that the name of the party won't include the word socialist. But you never know. I mean, they might call themselves the Democratic Socialists of Britain, you know, like Mandami in America calls himself the Democratic Socialists of America. But I'm not sure that this is on offer. I mean, the choice seems to be between the Left Party and the People's Party. In fact, some of the members in Wales have already registered the name People's Party. The most prominent supporter of claiming to be a socialist party has been Zara Sultana, who has given definitions of socialism that are not too bad if the words are taken literally. I mean, I'll read three statements that she's made. This is the first one. This was in Liverpool on the 9th of October. We're not here for lowering a few bills here and there and the sprinkling of a wealth tax. We're here for a fundamental transformation of society, the means of production controlled by workers. And another very simple idea, working class controlling the wealth that they produce. It's called socialism. And then in Merthyr on the 25th of October, we shouldn't just be talking about taxing the rich or nationalizing a few utilities, but about replacing capitalism with socialism, the democratic economy under workers' control, organized for social lead and ecological balance. We don't just want a bigger slice of the cake, we want the bakery. And finally, in Durham last weekend, what I'm saying is we need socialism. We need to be explicitly socialist. That is not tweaking here and there. It's not just lowering a few bills and a wealth tax just sprinkled on top, but it's a fundamental transformation of our society, the working class controlling the wealth they produce and the means of production in their hands. I mean, these are all passable definitions of socialism. But of course, the question is, does she mean the same as we do? Probably not. But they still put discussion on what socialism is into the public debate. And a better anyway than what the Trotskyists would come up with. But it's not all that she says the new party should advocate. She has described taxing the rich, nationalising utilities and reducing bills as sprinklings. But in practice, this is what the new party will concentrate on. And even if it adopts a definition of socialism at its aim, this will just be for ceremonial occasions, while on a day-to-day basis it campaigns for reforms. I mean, there are a handful of people who do define socialism as we do, who have decided to join and to try to propagate socialism within it. Of course, they've no chance at all of winning over the party to real socialism, and are there to try and convince other members. I mean, I think this is a rather dishonest position. It could involve them telling workers to vote for reformist candidates. I mean, as members of the new party, they'd be expected to do this. But if they urge voters not to vote for fellow party, for fellow new party members, well, you know, what they're up to will be exposed. Now, to relate the talk to the original one about whether we're the left wing or whether left and right makes sense, these people definitely take the view that socialists are part of the left and are setting out to win fellow leftists to socialism. We, of course, are not opposed to trying to win over members of the new party. In fact, all branches have been taking part in distributing our special leaflet in a wide range of places. I mean, I've got a list of them here. Manchester, Bolton, Preston, Huddersfield, Doncaster, Cardiff, Newport, Brighton, Oxford, Stroud, London and Kent. And tomorrow, as we've already been discussing at the beginning, members will be out in Liverpool leafleting those attending the conference, because we are politically honest and are doing this as non-members of a new party, since we know it's only going to be another reformist party. Okay, that's the end of my introductory talk.